Hear your favorite NFL legends sharing their stories and insights every week right here on Thursday Night Tailgate with Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari. Take it away, guys.
When the door is locked, there's no way out.
And now back in making her fifth appearance with us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is Gay Coverhouse. Let me remind you a little bit about Gay's background. She is the former president of Notre Dame and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. She is the daughter of former Bucs owner Hugh Coverhouse. She is also the founder of Gay Coverhouse Players Outreach Program, which assists retired NFL players to access the benefits that they are entitled to from the NFL. She is also the author of the book Throwaway Players, The Concussion Crisis from Pee-wee Football to the NFL. And we are very excited she is back with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Gay, Chris and Bob, thanks for coming back on the
show.
Great
to have you back.
Oh, my pleasure. I wanted to tell you, yesterday, my father would have been 100 years old if he had lived.
Wow.
Wow. Well, certainly
is
happy birthday to him and his memory.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, you know, you're talking about the late 70s and Pastorini and... You know, we started playing in the mid-70s, but it seems like yesterday. And all of a sudden, I thought, you know, as I'm waiting to come on, I'm thinking, I thought, oh, my gosh, yesterday would have been my father's 100th birthday. But, you know, hearing Dan talk, it just feels like all of that just happened 2 weeks ago.
Indeed. And again, that's kind of where I wanted to start our time with you tonight, is kind of going back to when the Bucs first came into the league in 76. When I look back over the first ever draft that you guys did, Leroy Selman obviously being the number one overall pick, and then his brother Dewey Selman is who you guys picked in the third round. Did that just sort of happen, or were you hoping to get both of them?
No. Leroy would not come without Dewey.
Is that right?
That's right. I can't make that up. Leroy
was
the baby.
Was that something you guys knew going in? Like, look, if we're going to take, you know,
yes.
If we're taking Leroy, we got to pick Dewey, or else we're going to have a guy that's not going to show
yes.
up.
Yes, we knew.
Wow.
That. It's like we knew not draft Bo Jackson. We knew not to draft him because his agent had told us he would not play for us. But. Ray Perkins was so blinking stubborn, I was in the draft room. And Ray Perkins, I mean, we had just gotten off the phone with his agent saying, Bo will not play in Tampa. And all of a sudden, Ray Perkins says, we're taking him. And I went, oh, my God, my father's going to die. And, of course, Bo Jackson did not come. And we lost the first-round pick.
First coach, John McKay. I'm not sure right. There is a bigger character of the game or a funnier head coach, maybe ever. What do you remember about John McKay? What's your favorite John McKay story?
Well, I think the real problem is no sports writer or fan in Tampa got the fact that he had a dry, dry California wit. And when, after one particularly awful game, a sports reporter yelled up at the press conference, what did you think about the execution of your offensive line? And he says, I am all for it. And nobody got it.
That's a great
line. Meanwhile, those of us that knew him were over in the corner just dying, laughing, and just dying, you know, because he would have liked to have executed every single one of them because his quarterback got killed. And he would have liked to take every one of those linemen out and shot him. But he said what he thought. But they just didn't get it. You know, the sports writers and journalists at the time just did not get that California dry wit.
And Gay, one of the other top draft picks that you guys had is one of my all-time favorite players as a guy from Pittsburgh. You guys took Hugh Greene in the first round in 81, and Hugh was a guy that nearly won the Heisman Trophy, you know, as a defensive end. And some tragic things happened to him injury-wise that curtailed his career. But how much did we lose? How much did it hurt you guys to see you had him, and then things didn't work out the way I'm sure you guys planned for it, too.
And he was a great guy. I mean, he was bright. He was very bright, athletically inclined, and tall. I mean, he was tall like Doug Williams was tall. You know, he could have played point guard really easily in basketball. But he was funny because we had this beach picnic every year before the start of the season, and we'd go over to St. Pete Beach. He had the greatest boat. It had more power in it. And so he took one of our players who was listed as weighing 185, but I think he probably weighed 135 because Hugh put him behind the boat on one of those parasailers, and Hugh got him up in the air, and he never could get the guy back down.
Wow.
We were on the beach watching this, and, you know, at first we're going, wow, that's a great ride. He's really flying up there. You know, he must be having a ball. And then we're going, something's not right. Something's not right. Hugh's going slower and slower and in circles trying to get him to land. He couldn't land. So that was the joke all season, was don't go behind the boat if you're green. You'll never get down.
That's great. Bob, questions for Gay?
Oh, it's fun.
Yeah, it's great to speak with you again, Gay. And I wanted to ask you about your dad and about his... We know he had the unsuccessful attempt to be an owner in the early 70s, but when did you become first aware, Gay, of your father's desire to own a professional franchise? It had to probably be happening way before the early 70s.
No, not really. He was so busy working as a tax attorney that it was nose to the grindstone, always. He flew out Monday mornings. He flew back in Friday afternoon. He played golf with his buddies on Saturday and then went to the 19th hole and played gin rummy and took my mother out dancing and did dinner Saturday night. And Sunday, we all went to church as a family, went to lunch. And then my brother and I did homework, and he got ready to fly out the next day. I mean, that was all that was going on. It was work, work, work. And then he said, I want to enjoy my life. I want to enjoy it. This is, you know, like a grind. And he said, I've got enough money to do something special. And he wanted to move to California in the worst way. And he asked Mom and he asked us kids, you know, we're like adults by then. And he said, would you move to California? I want to go reestablish us in California. And he wanted to be out in L.A. And, you know, I said, sure, because I knew, you know, I was flexible. My kids were flexible. You know, I knew my husband would go. You know, we were wanting to keep the family together. And what I did know was Dad already had his eye on a team. And it was because he had heard that Dan Reeves had died and he owned the Rams. And he knew that that team would be for sale. And so he flew out to California and told all of us, get ready to move. I'm going out to buy the Rams. And on Friday afternoon, he had a handshake agreement with Pete Rozelle to buy the team out of the estate. And on Monday morning, he read in the paper that the team had been sold to Bob Ersey. And was devastated. So he filed suit against the NFL. Ersey switched teams with Carol Rosenblum because Carol Rosenblum lived in L.A. but owned the Baltimore Colts. Ersey lived in Baltimore. So Carol had set this all up so that Carol could get the Rams where he lived in California and Bob could get the Baltimore team. Carol had it all set up. So Dad was awarded in an out-of-court settlement to the first expansion team. Well, you know, he tells all of us, you know, a couple of years later, you know, the two expansion teams will be Tampa, Florida, and Seattle. And he said, since we live in Florida, it's clear we'll get Tampa. And I said, well, I'm not hopping on this bandwagon. You know, Tampa, Jacksonville, they're close enough. I'll be glad to commute on the weekend. But I'm not moved. And so the day comes, and the first franchise that is awarded, which is Dad's, is Seattle. And Dad was thunderstruck. And he said, you know, he called all of us beside himself and said, they awarded me Seattle. I said, that was a fuck you. So he turned it down and was furious, just furious. And the man that was awarded the Tampa team lived in Washington, D.C., because they were going through antitrust then, and they needed a lobbyist to make sure the antitrust went the way the league wanted it to go. And so they awarded it to this guy, Paul McCloskey, and he could not come up with the money. 3 weeks later, he still couldn't pay for the team. Dad had the money, you know, already secured through NCNB in North Carolina, Hugh McCall, which is now Bank of America. And so they called Dad up with their tail between the legs, and that's how he got the team. But he said, from this point on, it's a business, pure and simple business. There is no love. There is no nothing. It's a business. And so it's sort of a sad story. Because going from, you know, California, L.A. Rams, you know, all of his enthusiasm and excitement to be an owner turned into, you know, just one disappointment after another. He went on to, you know, be head of management council, and he computerized ticket sales and did an awful lot for the league. But he knew they were a nest of vipers.
Tough story. Okay, I want to I've always wanted to get your opinion about you being familiar with the Tampa Bay area, about baseball in that part of the state. We think of Florida, Southern Florida, we think of it as all football, both at the college and pro level. And the Tampa Bay, the Rays up here, we watch them in Boston on TV. Gay, it looks like there's the very few people in the stands. There's more Yankee fans in the stands down there than there are Tampa.
Yeah.
And now we're hearing about possible building stadiums, the team staying there. I mean, what do you see for the future there? And is it truly, can it ever be like a baseball town down there?
They were a baseball town over in Tampa for Steinbrenner, because Steinbrenner lived in Tampa. Steinbrenner made, you know, opened his home to events, charities. He was a big friend of Schwarzkopf. He supported the symphony and would have concerts for children, and Schwarzkopf would be there handing out teddy bears. You know, he would do things like see a school bus broken down by the side of the road and send pizza for all the kids on the school bus. He was, you know, he was Mr. Baseball for Tampa. And Tampa formed an allegiance to the Yankees, and they have the Yankee Field right across from, you know, the Buccaneer Stadium, and that place is mob for a spring training. And so for the Rays to come in, Vince Namoli, come in and try to compete with Steinbrenner's Yankees, it's just no competition. That's the problem. And St. Pete is a different, it's a different group of people than Tampa. St. Pete was the first city in America to have ramped sidewalks for the wheelchairs because of all the old people. You know, it's just got a different vibe. It's not a vibrant, young, hip club town. It's old, and the population is old. And they can't really change that. And so Vince has, you know, got an uphill battle. But yes, they are building a new stadium, but it's in St. Pete.
Okay.
because they realize they've got to cover it and air condition it because it's just too damn hot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
Jay, before we let you go, you're...
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you do such great work for the alumni players and the former players, trying to advocate for them and help them get the benefits that they so richly deserve. Talk about some of the things that you're working on. Is the league getting any better at trying to help support the things that you are trying to do?
No. The league, I'll give you an example. I have been personally involved in applying for benefits for players for a number of years. So I keep statistics. In the last 2 years alone, I have had 21 applicants and 19 of them were denied from two doctors in Tampa. These two doctors consistently deny the benefits through test results. Out of 21, and the league is sending people from across the country. If you live in Seattle or if you live in Washington, D.C., guess where you go for testing? Tampa, Florida. The reason you're being sent to Tampa, Florida, I believe, but I cannot prove, I believe you're being sent there because there's a neurologist and a neuropsych who are guaranteed to vote for the NFL against the player every time. I mean, out of 21 guys I have personally done, 19 have been rejected by these two lawyers in Tampa, two doctors in Tampa.
Can't you appeal? There's not a second opinion. It's just, hey, we're shuffling you guys all through our doctor.
Oh, I write the appeals. I help with the applications. I write the appeals myself, and I have a group of attorneys who take them because after I appeal, if I'm denied on appeal, I send them to my attorneys, my ERISA attorneys, and they take over from there. And we're winning in the ERISA courts. And the NFL is coming and wanting to go to arbitration with us. But I shouldn't have to do that.
Right.
I should not have to do that. But that's what's happening.
Agreed. Before we let you go, I'm always amazed by you. We're always amazed by you because of the great things that you do and also the things that you have to overcome just to do them. Update us. How are you? How are you doing?
I am now transfusion dependent, which is fine. I go to Mayo Clinic down here in Florida every 8 weeks and get some blood. And then I'm good to go for 8 weeks. But without blood donors, I would be dead. I mean, thank God for blood donors. If you could give a little PSA to people to donate blood, they're keeping people like me alive.
Absolutely.
It's an amazing story to think about what you go through and yet how much of an advocate you are for other people. You're an amazing woman.
Oh, thank you. I do it because I love them. I really love them. I know what they're going through, and whether I have met them in the past or not, they're still my guides.
Jay, thank you so much for everything you do. Thank you so much for your time and coming back and be a part of the show. We hope you'll come back again real soon and update us on all the great work you're doing. You're a wonderful woman, and we are very thankful for you.
Thanks so much, Jay.
Well, you're welcome. Just give me a call anytime. It's always a pleasure.
Take care, Gay. All the best to you and your family. We'll catch up soon.
Bye-bye.
That is the great Gay Culverhouse. And Bob, a woman who's dealing with cancer all the way into her bone. And like she says, she has to get a blood transfusion every 8 weeks. But she is out there all the time advocating for the alumni players to get them the benefits they deserve. There's just no slowing Gay Culverhouse down. What an amazing individual she is. Really admire her.
I think I can speak for yourself, Chris. One of the more inspirational people we've ever spoken to, how she has her, I'm not going to say limitations, but health concerns and continues to try to help others that probably aren't as in bad a shape as she is. So it's an amazing story, and her family is amazing. Again, if it wasn't for her dad, you probably wouldn't see football or baseball in Tampa. So, again, it's an honor talking to her, and you get goosebumps, Chris, just knowing how she continues going, and there's no quitting that lady.
No, there is not. All right, Bob and I will come back and do our Spotlight on the Positive segment. Hang with us. We're going to come right back on the other side of this real quick station break.